Welcome to Bellwether Friends. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us because we're librarians. I'm Anna and I can talk almost normally now without coughing.
I'm Aline and I'm just about to pick up the slack.
Woo! Every couple of weeks or once a month. Sorry guys.
We've missed you.
Yeah, we will get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 76. Episode 75 is so epic, we had to take 2 weeks off. Horror movie watch recap.
You may recall that we talked about horror movies a while back. And at the close of that conversation, Anna promised to watch 10 horror movies of my choosing. And we would discuss them, and I would refine my knowledge of her sort of default, I don't like horror movies, and try to find areas that she might enjoy, and hard passes, and so on. And we have done, and we are back.
We are back. And we ended up watching 17.
So far.
We have more to watch, but we figured we really need to just record this episode and move on with our lives, because we have a lot of holiday romance movies to watch, so...
We've already watched like 20 holiday romance movies, and they're beginning to muddy the horror waters.
Right, so we need to just get this material recorded while it's still lukewarm. So what we're going to do...
Tepid.
Our tepid takes on horror. What we're going to do is just sort of cover the ground of what we watched, just talk briefly about each movie as briefly as we can. As loquacious as we are.
Have we met?
Right. And then Aline's going to tell me her conclusion about the Reader's Advisory, Watcher's Advisory project. And then we're going to do our obsessions and go away.
All right, sounds good. Knuckle down. 17 movies in 3 hours. So we can spend 20 minutes on each movie. Perfect. The first movie that we watched... I wanted to, like, start off strong with something that was a period piece, that was creepy, that had, like, no blood at all, that Anna would not recoil from on any point, and I chose The Others. I didn't write down what year these were.
2001.
Starring Nicole Kidman.
So it was a remake, right?
And other things.
Wasn't it?
No? Yes, I think it might have been a remake. But I'm talking about the Nicole Kidman one.
The Weinstein...
Right, it was a Miramax production.
Sorry
about that. That happened right after that.
And it was a Tom Cruise production.
Recoiled. Oh, probably so.
What a combo.
Whew.
But it was set in 1945 in the Channel Islands, and Nicole Kidman lives in this creepy house with her children who can't be exposed to the sun, and then these three creepy... servants show up and say, we're going to be your servants since the ones you had quit. And it seems like they've been around before.
A little bit. So if you've seen The Others, you know the secret. And I believe it is billed as a ghost story. And it has twist. It has beautiful costumes. It has a beautiful setting.
Here are my notes.
Okay.
Some of them. I feel like such a good parent. Why are they Catholic? Covered furniture is creepy.
I'm going to drape sheets over all of the furniture.
So the tropes that came up in this one, which we did a little bit of keeping track of, were seasoned retainers, searching the house, old photographs being important.
Oh, yeah.
And twist ending. Now, I enjoyed the twist ending of this one, and overall, I was, like, pro The Others. It was a good choice for me.
I'm not terrible at my job.
No, I don't think so.
So the next one we did was The Babadook, which is new.
2014.
And it is cool
first
and
of
hip
all, well,
and has become a gay icon.
Right. Somehow. The important thing, this is one of the ones that we discussed in our run-up as one of the few that was directed by a woman.
Woohoo!
It stars Essie Davis, a.k.a. Miss Fisher.
Woohoo! Although she's blonde, which is weird.
Yeah, her hair is really terrible, but she is like a rundown single mother whose son is seeing things based on this creepy picture book called The Babadook.
Not triggery at all.
Not triggery one bit. And the problem for us with this one was that the impetus for the horror was her grief at her husband's death. And it was a little too post-traumatic, realistic for us. We want our horrors to be more otherworldly based.
I would like it to be properly supernatural with some vampires killing children, please and thank you. I don't want it to be the darkness is inside you. Did we say spoiler alert?
Oh, right. We're going to spoil some of these. I mean, not heavily. If it's a twist ending, we...
we'll back off of some twist endings.
Right.
But maybe check the show notes for the list of the 17 movies we're talking about.
Yeah.
And decide if you want to keep listening.
Good one. Good one. So here are my notes. Our great art on the Babadook book.
Great art.
Are they trying to ruin books? Question mark.
Books are dead.
The cockroaches... and the closed captioning, which said, chittering intensifies.
Oh, right. I love it when the chittering intensifies.
Spoiler, there's a dead dog in this movie.
Ugh.
And the end of the movie was the part where it got a little weird. And the Babadook...
so you know how in Shaun of the Dead... his best friend, Nick Frost, ends up a zombie, and he has him, like, chained in the shed out back, and they play Xbox together. That's kind of how they end up with the Babadook.
Sort of? Kind of.
She goes down in the basement and gives him a pail of slops, or what was it she gave him?
I don't know.
I can't remember. She took him something.
So, tropes in this one were house noises, kids seeing things, and dead husband.
Triple threat.
Triple threat.
So we live in a 125-year-old house that makes noise.
Yeah.
Whenever I am here by myself, I am convinced that someone has broken into the back porch and is going to come in through the kitchen and kill me every time I'm alone in the house.
Yeah.
So.
Good times.
So I, also not my favorite thing in a horror movie.
No, I'm not so interested in house noises. I like old photographs, though.
Right. Boxes of old photographs. There's old photographs in this one, too.
Yes. Maybe?
They're not critical to the plot, but they exist.
Well, what's the point if they're not critical to the plot?
I don't know.
So, the next one we watched was Scream, 1996. Sinister Laugh was one of the captions. Popcorn Sacrifice was another thing that
popcorn
I noticed.
Popcorn Sacrifice?
Yeah, she puts on popcorn
over.
At the beginning, Drew Barrymore.
Right, and it
and
burns.
And then she gets killed. Neve Campbell has an Indigo Girls poster in her room. I have written and underlined, dump him, about Skeet Ulrich.
Oh, Skeet Ulrich.
Now, having seen the end of the movie, I can tell how right I was.
Also, he's the dad in Riverdale. He's Jughead's dad in Riverdale.
There are many dads in Riverdale. Come on now.
All the dads in Riverdale. Oh, yeah.
Don't Fear the Reaper plays. I feel like that happened... multiple movies. It might have been in Halloween 2. Not Halloween 2. Yes!
Is
it was
it?
Also in Halloween.
Don't Fear the Reaper
played. So
if you hear Don't Fear the Reaper, Fear the Reaper,
fear the
y'all.
Reaper. Let's see. There was an actual video store in Scream.
That's a busy one.
A busy video store.
A video store. Remember video stores? I loved video stores.
Oh, I forgot Liev Schreiber was in this. And it showed the peak 1990s fabric shortage that all girls had, where they could not wear anything that covered them fully, that their midriffs had to be exposed.
I think it was a problem with clothing manufacturing.
Yeah.
The jean waistlines dropped, and they couldn't keep up with shirt designs. They, like, didn't realize that there was a thing. And so suddenly there were 2 inches of midriff exposed everywhere, and then they had to sort of, like, rework shirt design.
Maybe. So my other notes are, that's not how garage doors work.
Right.
Half an hour too long.
Hey now.
And then for tropes, for some reason, I have bathroom overhearing.
Bathroom overhearing?
Bathroom overheating? No, I think it's overhearing. I don't know.
Maybe.
Close up on eyeball.
Oh, yes, close up on eyeball.
And fancy house.
Hey, close up on eyeball happens later.
Right.
Fancy house?
I don't know.
Drew's house is enormous. There's, like, big sprawling houses.
It's... How can I identify tropes when I've only seen 3 movies?
You've seen more than 3 movies. Okay, so the next one we saw was... Now, this was hilarious because we immediately watched Scary Movie, which was made in 2000, which Scary Movie is, as you may know, a parody film, and it most closely parodies Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer. And there are so scenes closely that are word for word with Scream, and because we watched them back to back, it was even funnier, more glaring, something, louder, something like that. So that was interesting.
I have gross, dumb, occasionally funny.
It has Anna Faris in it, who we love.
Okay.
She's in The House Bunny.
Yes, we like The House Bunny.
What else to say about it? It was a Wayans production.
Yeah.
So we do appreciate the work of people of color.
Yeah, not many people of color to be seen in this 17 movie stretch.
Not a lot, no.
There's not much to say about
There's not Scary really much movie, to say really. About
We probably gonna... should have seen I Know What You Did Last Summer before we watched Scary Movie, but...
It was just not how the
cards
DVDs fell right into the DVD player. So the next one we watched was Behind the Mask, which was made in 2006.
The story of Leslie Vernon.
The rise and fall rise of Leslie
and,
Vernon.
The rise of Leslie Vernon. Anyway, there's a subtitle on that.
And it...
No, that's a different movie.
Behind the Mask continues in the self-referential trope.
Oh, it's so self-referential.
Where Leslie Vernon is an aspiring horror movie franchise, and he has allowed a grad student and her cameraman to follow him around and, like, make a documentary of the inception of Leslie Vernon, who hopes to become a Freddy Krueger, a Michael Myers, a Jason Voorhees. And you should see me gesturing.
He's very upfront about it. He has a mentor who's great.
Who's awesome.
He goes on about phallic and yonic imagery. He talks about the survival girl. I mean, it's if you are a fan of horror movies, you should definitely watch it. It was very good. I enjoyed it a lot.
It was really good, and it wasn't gory, and it wasn't bloodless.
No.
But it wasn't gory. We didn't talk about the gore factor in Scream and Scary Movie.
That's where I said gross.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Also, that's not how garage doors work.
Right. We didn't talk about Rose McGowan either. Also, ill-fatedly blonde, yeah. Ill-advisedly blonde.
That's what happens.
If you are in a horror movie, can handle it. A brunette becomes blonde. Okay.
Jamie Lee Curtis survives.
She does. She's not blonde.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Although I think that Behind the Mask girl might be blonde.
She was.
The survivor girl.
She, the grad student interviewer girl.
Yeah.
So she was on Phenom, which was a sitcom back in the 80s, maybe? 90s, maybe? 80s. I watched it in high school. She was a tennis player.
Oh, okay.
She was a Phenom.
So I think, out of all the ones we watched, Behind the Mask was one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah. I like a mockumentary, and the way that they...
Right.
Just the way that they, like, his mentor was out being buried in his coffin so that he could practice, like, staying alive when people think he's dead so he can pop back out and kill people later. And just his, he and his wife were so supportive.
They really were. They were really sweet.
And there was a scene with a librarian and looking at microfilm.
Oh my god, I forgot the microfilm scene.
So, Behind the Mask, I give it my top rating for the horror movies that we watched.
Huh. I'm going to put a little star by it so that I remember that. So the next thing we watched was new to me. I should say, as we go, that The Babadook was new to me, and Behind the Mask was new to me, and this next one was The Conjuring, which was made in 2013, and I watched this because of Kate, 14 Across, our worst bestseller friend, loving this movie. She was tweeting about it during the lead up to Halloween when we were all watching horror movies, and she was talking about really loving the relationship between the ghost hunters. Now, The Conjuring is based on the work of two real life ghost hunters whose names we have not written down, and they are played by
two people. Farmiga?
Vera Farmiga and Patrick.
A guy.
something.
He's just a guy.
It's a dude. And they play off each other really well, and they are ghost hunters, and they come, and they will do an exorcism, or they will tell you if it's ghosts
in
your house.
They're not supposed to do exorcisms.
Or if it's mice in their house. They're not authorized to do exorcisms, and so they try to work with the church.
Right.
But if the church will not work with them, and they are like sort of like the advance party, so they're the church scouts, and they find out if there needs to be an exorcism or not. And a really cool thing in the movie is that they have a room in their house, and it's got that awesome dark wood paneling from your grandparents' basement that has all of the artifacts of their hauntings and their possessions and their evils.
It's very X-Files warehousey, except cozier.
Yeah, it's like Warehouse 13, but it's in their rumpus room.
Right.
And I really liked it, and we went on to watch The Conjuring 2, which we'll talk about when we get to it in the list. And it was good and creepy, and it scared the tar out of me. And because it was about demonic possession, it really didn't stick with me, which I really appreciate in
a horror
movie.
The only part I don't like about demonic possession, apparently, is that the vomiting of, like, white fluid or whatever that was.
Right. Anna keeps very close notes on vomiting because that is her hard pass. If there is vomiting, or even, like, drooling blood, so if zombies are not swallowing before they take their next bite, she gets picky about that, too. Which I can endorse. I am not a fan of messy eating or vomiting.
So I have, the tropes I have are kids seeing things, which we saw in The Babadook. Hiding games being a terrible idea. Don't play hiding games in the mysterious house that you've just moved into. Also, why didn't they paint before unpacking? People are in these houses are never painting the walls before they unpack.
And the walls are always,
like, gray.
They're gray and they're, like, sponge painted with charcoal.
Oh, my God.
And the finish is amazing.
It is. Whoever set designed the place did a great job. There's a secret basement, which I'm afraid that we might have.
We do have a secret basement.
There's an out-of-tune piano. There are unexplained bruises. There's a haunted wardrobe. There's a guy from Office Space.
Haunted wardrobe.
He's the husband, the guy from Office Space.
And right,
the, and
Ron.
And the mom
Ron,
is Lily Taylor.
Right, Lily Taylor is the mom.
And it's set in New England and in the 70s.
Ron somebody. Right, all of the horror movies are set in New England.
No, they aren't. Scream is set in California.
And I used to live in the Pacific Northwest.
The Babadook is set in Australia.
Where there is no horror at all. There's no horror in the Pacific Northwest because it's gray all the time.
Wait, isn't the Cabin in the Woods set in...
Shh.
Okay.
We have Sasquatches.
All right. No Babadooks, just Sasquatches.
Yes.
And also all the clocks were at 3:07.
Right, because that was when the thing happened that possessed the house.
Anyway, I liked The Conjuring. It was good, except for the projectile vomiting.
Yeah, I liked The Conjuring a lot. That was...
Yeah, we watched the second one, which is as much of an endorsement as you're going to get, really.
From us. Okay, so the next movie we watched was Tucker and Dale vs. Evil from 2010, and I loved Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. I watched it in my past life.
You love
life.
Alan Tudyk.
I love Alan Tudyk. I watched it when it first came out. And it was the first one in our stream that was being self-referential, but also, like, calling out the specifics of five friends on a getaway to a cabin in the woods, which is used in Evil Dead, which might have been first done in Evil Dead. And it is in Cabin in the Woods, and it is in all of these things. But Tucker and Dale versus Evil is doing it. And the premise is these two rednecks have bought their own cabin in the woods, and it is going to be maybe their honeymoon getaway. I don't know. They talk a lot about being so happy to have this cabin in the woods. And Tucker bought it, and Dale is coming out to help him fix it up. And then the five college kids show up to camp at the adjacent cabin in the woods, and they are convinced that these rednecks are the murderous hillbillies, that they are not. They're just trying to be helpful. And hijinks ensue.
Oh my God, terrible impalement and gross death ensue. And, I mean, it is funny because it was, like, accidental all the time.
It was, like, all accidental. It was like, wait, let me help you. Don't run away. And then they impale themselves
on
a piece of
protruding tree limb.
Dead limb.
Right.
Yeah.
But, no.
Anna disapproves.
No. There's a guy and the wood chipper. No.
But if you are a horror movie person at all, it is aces.
Oh, yeah.
It is great.
I could see that it had fun points. And it had class issues. It pointed out class issues galore.
Yes, for sure. Indeedy. Next up, we watched Zombieland, which is one that I can recite that I love. It came out in 2005.
Nine. Sorry.
Is that a nine?
That's
really?
A nine.
Okay. I'm going to write that over here. 2009. Zombieland stars Jesse Eisenberg and Woody Harrelson and Emma Stone and Abigail Breslin. And there are cameos by Bill Murray. And that might be it. It is really funny. It is a zombie apocalypse. Everybody's trying to get out west, or everybody's trying to get out east, and they are going to try to get to Pacific Playland, and it's hilarious, and it's gross. There is
super gross.
There's a lot of gross zombie eating things.
Don't Fear the Reaper plays.
Also, Don't Fear the Reaper plays. Anna did not approve of Zombieland. She could comprehend what I liked about it, because there's a romance in it.
There is, and I will never be sad about seeing Emma Stone.
Good to know. We own it. It was one that she had never seen that I said, hey, I have it. We'll watch it. It'll be one of them.
Every time the zombies were in action, they did like a vomiting blood action thing.
But they weren't vomiting blood. They were just messy eaters. And that clarified for me that there was that. It's like, that's part of it. She also doesn't like disemboweling. I think that there's like an
Tucker
intestinal
and Dale,
thing
yeah.
that she doesn't like.
We went over this ground when we did our mini recap. So now that you are all very familiar with my issues.
So somehow we waited until we were 10 movies in to watch Psycho.
1960. 1960.
No, I think it's 1960.
Okay. I can't read my own handwriting.
Right.
Sorry.
And I'm trying to read it upside down, so.
Which I don't remember if I had seen, but if I had seen, I wouldn't have remembered any of the scene-setting part where she's in Phoenix and she has to leave because she's trying to run away and be with her illicit boyfriend.
Who doesn't want to be with her.
Not really, it seems like. But she steals money and has to take shelter at this creepy hotel. Not in New England.
Where is she driving to? Wait, I don't remember where the boyfriend is.
I think he's in California.
So she's driving
he's
from
like
Phoenix
not far
to California.
From where she ends up, maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, Psycho, twist ending. I enjoyed it.
I love Psycho. I've loved Psycho forever. I've seen it forever. I've even seen the Vince Vaughn Anne Heche remake.
No.
I saw the Seattle Symphony performed the score with the film projected on behind the stage. I have loved Psycho a long time, and there are things about it that are really spectacular, and there are things about it that do not age well, and I still think that it's one of those classic things. I love that it's black and white. The blood is chocolate syrup, in case you are planning to film your horror movie in black and white.
I was going to film it in color.
Do you have anything to say about Psycho?
It made me want to do a project where we just watch a bunch of Alfred Hitchcock movies.
Did you write that down?
No.
We should do a Hitchcock episode.
Okay.
In the wake of all of the Hollywood nonsense, we will need to have a trigger warning disclaimer on it.
Well, the nonsense, we are going to go ahead and do a content warning on a couple of the movies coming up. So if descriptions of violence against women in particular bother you, can skip ahead.
Okay.
Yes, the Hollywood nonsense being the fact that Hollywood is a terrible place for women to try to survive.
And that men have been in power and they have not used their power for good in all cases.
Right. Hitchcock undoubtedly was,
Hitchcock
at the very
is
least,
well known to be Weinsteinian.
Yeah. Trying to figure out when The Conjuring 2 came out.
And the next one we watched was The Conjuring 2. We came back to it, again, in part because of 14 Across's interest in the relationship between the principals, which I also enjoyed. This is them on another case. This time they're in England, and a woman, again, in a house that needs to be painted, and the father of her children is not present. And she has 5 or 6 children.
She has 5 children.
There's
I think
a whole lot of kids, and one of them is possessed.
Yep.
By the spirit of an old dude who died in the chair in the corner. And this brought up a whole lot of cultural stuff where I was like, right, in Europe, houses are rented furnished. So this chair that somebody died in might be still in your house just because that's what it is. And people, when they move house, they show up with their suitcase and their box of records, and that's that.
But then there was this, like, evil, scary nun thing that was, like, behind the guy.
Right, there was a haunted nun picture.
I think I like the first Conjuring better because it had a little less.
In the Conjurings both, the Vera Farmiga character is the clairvoyant who can tell when there is possession, and she has, like, an evil nun hangover from a previous case.
Yeah.
And that bleeds into this case, which is a little far-fetched when, you know, I mean, the ghost hunting, we can buy. The determining whether an exorcism is needed, we can totally buy.
Based on a true story, fine.
But the evil nun hangover from a past case, a little hard to swallow.
The next one we saw was another, this might be the oldest one we watched, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1956.
Oh my god, I loved revisiting this.
I liked it a lot. Appreciated that. So this guy comes back to town and people are, he's a doctor, and people are complaining that their relatives are acting weird and that they aren't their relatives, and he has a love interest. They're both divorced. I was like, woo, they're both divorced. That's exciting.
Especially for 1956.
Right. And basically there are, you know, it's, I'm going to spoil Invasion of the Body Snatchers for you if you haven't seen it in the last 60 years. There are aliens. Something is taking over people when they sleep and replacing them. And they're like plants that are grown in these little pod things.
It's bloodless. The pods are a little snotty.
Yeah.
But they're not. It's just creepy as creepy can be.
Yeah.
And it makes
they're
you.
They're like these trucks that are just like carrying pods around. And everyone is pretty much taken over by the end. In this town that he lives in, including his love interest.
So if you like the Stepford Wives, then this is totally for you. And I recommend the 70s version of the Stepford Wives over the Nicole Kidman version. And when I said we were watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers, our friend said, oh my god, not the Nicole Kidman one. And so I thought, I didn't know if he was talking about the Stepford Wives or if she was in a new Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Because we have a later version
right,
of it.
The 70s
but it's,
one.
But a 70s one, not a Nicole Kidman one.
I'm afraid the 70s one might be gooier.
It is. I've seen it.
So, I'm glad that we watched the 50s one. Thank you, 50s.
Thank you, 50s. Thanks, we love your
lot.
Horror movies.
So, The Evil Dead 1981 is where it gets bad.
Violence against women.
Yes. Forcible penetration by tree.
Evil tree rape.
Right.
Is what it is. And it's even referenced in Cabin in the Woods later as a death method, because we watched that one next, which we'll get to. So The Evil Dead stars Bruce Campbell, and there was The Evil Dead 2, there was Army of Darkness, there was a remake of Evil Dead by Rob Zombie, and I don't know how close that remake was because I haven't seen it. I'm a big fan of Bruce Campbell and have been since the 80s. But I don't...
This is not good.
Remember Evil Dead being as bad as it was. I saw it. I saw it as a double bill at the art house when I was in college. And so it was only about 10 years old when I saw it. And yeah, it was really dreadful.
Okay, here I'm going to give you selections for my notes. Here are the tropes. Doors, basements, dripping, information on tapes. Oh, doors opening on their own, excuse me.
Doors closing on their own.
Car won't start. Fog. Dismemberment. Electrical weirdness.
Maybe there's a killer after you.
One by one we will take you. Sumerian burial practices.
Oh. Which one has Klaatu Barata Nictu in it?
This one.
Oh, perfect. That's how you raise the evil dead. Yeah. BT dubs.
I know. So, the thing that I thought was interesting about it was that it gave us a zombie point of view. Like, some of the time the perspective was from the zombie.
Oh, zombie perspective.
Right. I thought it was very creative of them to manage to split up inside a very tiny cabin. You know how you're always like, don't split up. But they, not only did they manage to split up, but it's inside like a two-room shack.
This is true. This is another five friends adjourned to a cabin in the woods.
You said there was an extra girl.
There is an extra girl. And she is the one dude's sister. Is the extra girl the sister? Right.
It was way too long. It was super gross. And there was some stop motion claymation stuff toward the end. It was like everything in the kitchen sink. You just hope that it would end. And it would never. It just wouldn't end. Put this on the bottom of my list.
I'll put a little red X by it.
It's not good. Not good.
And I will agree / confess to finding it not nearly as good as it was when I first saw it 25 years ago.
It's because your tastes have improved.
My tastes have definitely improved. The next one we watched was The Cabin in the Woods, which is 2012, so good. It is not a parody. It is unbelievably self-referential. They are having the five beautiful young people adjourn to the cabin in the woods, and there is a
newly blonde girl.
A newly blonde girl. Right, she just bleached her hair. But there is a, like, war room behind the scenes running everything in the cabin in the woods.
Right.
And it is...
That's not a spoiler.
Run by Bradley Whitford. That's not a spoiler. But so they are pushing things at the friends in the cabin in the woods. So, like, there is a creepy book in the bookcase, and there is a box in the basement, and there is a thing, and there are all of these different methods by which the evil can be unleashed upon the five friends in the cabin in the woods. And Bradley Whitford is, like, watching through all of the cameras, and they've got the whiteboard, and all of the different departments have bets on what they're going to take as the way they're going to all die.
Yep, the betting pool is good.
That is not telling you, that is not spoiling it for you, and it's great because, like, this twist at the end and the climactic moments are very satisfying. Tell me about what's wrong with it.
I don't know. I mean, it's Joss Whedon. I felt like his, like, ending was like, haha, see what I did there?
Oh, Joss Whedon.
It was clever. It was alright. But they unfortunately chose redneck zombies as their way to go. And this is a quote, redneck zombies, I believe. And, you know, I would have been way more interested in any number of other methods, except for evil trees, obviously. So... Zombies, blah. I'm not a zombie fan.
I do like zombies.
I know you do.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
The next one was a treasure that we had to get from the other side of the state.
Yes.
It was Ginger Snaps, which was made in 2000. Tell us about Ginger Snaps, Anna.
Well, this girl and her sister are teenagers, and they are... sort of death-obsessed and angry. One of them's 16 and one of them's 15, and Ginger, the older one, gets bitten by a werewolf and starts changing into a werewolf.
As you do,
growing hair. Could be a puberty metaphor. Mimi Rogers is their mom.
Oh, right! Mimi Rogers, ex-wife of Tom Cruise.
I have too much vomit.
There was too much vomit.
I have Let's Get Away, Just Us Girls. So Mimi Rogers knows that her daughter is turning into a werewolf and her other daughter is trying to save her sister. And I don't remember if their dad gets killed or if she's just willing to leave him and get away from it all. It was really depressing and kind of gross and sad. But it had ladies in it, so yay.
And wasn't it made by ladies?
I think it might have been. There were lots of dead dogs in this one.
Oh, yeah, lots of dead dogs.
Anyway, it was different than a lot of the ones we watched.
It was, and yet it So it was very lady-centric, and it seemed to have the alienation of youth down. So there are a lot of, there's a whole lot of, like, the evil comes out of the woods and kills the sexually active young people.
Yeah.
Beautiful young people. There is not so much in our list of 17 that we started with. There wasn't so much of the evil coming from within, the adolescent rage, right. the puberty metaphors, and especially not the menstrual metaphors of right. the lunacy right. and the werewolfing and the moon and womanhood. It being a terrifying thing,
yeah.
which maybe we should go watch Carrie or not. And but that's something that I have, like, thought about. So the next one that we watched was the Swedish version of Let the Right One In from 2008.
I think it's interesting that we watched one werewolf one and one vampire one.
Multiple, no, one zombie.
And like 8 zombie ones.
Hey now. They were, no!
Okay, Evil Dead and Zombieland, and there was another zombie.
Cabin in the Woods ended up with zombies
right.
in it.
Yes, but Invasion of the Body Snatchers, they weren't zombies, I guess.
So, I saw Let the Right One in the theater when it came out, and I knew that it was a vampire movie with a little girl in it and that it was in Swedish. And I saw it in a movie theater that we watched. The DVD did not have a Swedish title track.
Yeah, it was dubbed.
Language track. It was dubbed. So that was problematic for me. And so I watched it in Swedish, which was sort of distancing. And it's very quiet and dark and beautiful. And I loved it. The rattling you hear is the kitten playing with a new toy that we got out for her. So we'll try to edit some of that out, maybe.
Nah.
But she'll be rattling that a little bit. So Let the Right One In is a pre-adolescent vampire.
So it's set in 1982. And the part I liked about it, it was really about logistical problems. If you're a vampire and you want to live in the world still, then you have to drink blood. But if you can't go out in the daytime and you appear to be a 12-year-old girl, then you need someone to help take care of you. And so at the beginning of the movie, she, like, moves into this apartment complex where the boy that she makes friends with lives. And she has a caretaker who kind of does a terrible job of killing people and bringing them their blood back for her, but it,
he really, you know, does.
But the movie invites, like, the idea of, like, doing this every week or every night or whatever, however often it has to happen, must be absolutely soul destroying. And so maybe he's doing a bad job because he wants to stop.
It's like, I'm ready to be caught. I need this to be over.
I appreciated how cats really don't care for vampires and will attack them on sight. After all the dead dogs, I was like, cats are the way. Before, I was totally sold on dogs, but now I think it's cats.
And cats were awesome.
My moral of the story is, this is why you shouldn't make friends with anyone. But I'm pretty sure that it was a story about friendship and also killing bullies.
True, the bullies were a thing. This was remade as Let Me In, and the American remake was pretty good, and I encourage you to watch some version of it if you can tolerate vampire movies, because it's kind of touching, and it doesn't have a layer of sex like so many horror movies do. There's no layer of sex to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's the very tiniest, like, teen
glimmer of pre-adolescent crush.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't disagree, but there are no bare breasts. There are no interruptions of teen copulation by axe-wielding murderers, right. as you will find in some of the movies that we did not get to.
Not yet. Well, let's go to I Know What You Did Last Summer, which came out in 1997, the year after Scream.
Oh, 1997.
Featuring Freddie Prinze Jr., Buffy, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt, the three named ladies, Ryan Phillippe, Anne Heche was in it.
Oh, right.
It's written by, or directed by, Kevin Williamson, the guy who did Dawson's Creek. And he named the beach Dawson's Beach. Yes, okay.
Oh my gosh.
It starts out with mansplaining urban legends, and it goes from there.
And it goes from there.
From there.
Jennifer Love Hewitt wears lots and lots of necklaces.
Why necklaces?
And they're why necklaces that disappear into her plunging necklines.
Right, right.
Not that we noticed.
Someone had a light tank top, and then someone else had a dark tank top. It was just like the Fast and the Furious.
It really was. It was Ryan Phillippe in a white one and Freddie Prinze Jr. in a black one.
Oh, remember the upper arm bracelet?
Yes.
Basically, if you want to know what 90s fashion was like, you should watch I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Particularly Sarah Michelle Gellar's get-ups.
Oh my goodness. I did appreciate how... So the baseline plot of this is that they run over this guy and kill him, and they don't want to get in trouble, so they dump the body into the ocean. And then a year later, there's a mysterious fisherman with a hook killing them.
Yes.
I appreciated that the girls took it upon themselves to, like, do online research and try and figure out who was doing this stuff.
Yes, there was research. Library research was featured in this.
Yeah.
We always love a library research feature.
And the, well, I wrote Believe Women in the margin of this, and I can't remember what moment it was that made me jot that down, but it's generally true that you should.
Yes, believe women. And the last one we watched for our watching so far, which we don't have a list of the other ones we're gonna watch, which I should have, but was Halloween from 1978.
Yep.
Starring Introducing Jamie Lee Curtis. Tell Laurie. Us about Halloween.
Halloween has great music. If you heard it.
Don't Fear the Reaper.
Well, not to mention Don't Fear the Reaper, but like just the atmospheric music.
Oh, that's right.
You would be. Exactly. So it's
all that anxiety inducing.
It opens up in 1963. In a small town in Illinois, and you see it from the perspective. This is another one where you get the killer's perspective, and that is Michael Myers. But when it opens, he's a little kid who murders his sister, I think because she took his mask. And so he is institutionalized for the next 15 years. And then he busts out, and it's coincidentally Halloween, and maybe that he did that on purpose.
I was gonna say, because the thing happened that
not coincidentally
his sister took his clown mask
right.
at Halloween, and he murders his sister in the very opening scenes, and his parents come home and he's standing there in his clown costume with a dripping knife, and his mother says, "Oh, Michael."
Right. It's
and
like, then it oh, fades to black. We only had so many sisters for you. It felt like it took a really long time to get to the bloody murdering of main characters. You know what I mean? Like, there was some collateral damage when he was getting to the town he grew up in. But it took a really long time for him to, like, stalk Jamie Lee Curtis and start killing her friends. And
that did take a while, yes.
There's a lot of walking. I have ominous neighborhood walking. There's a lot of ominous neighborhood walking. Like, walking along these suburban streets while he's cruising by in a car.
Making your way downtown.
Jamie Lee Curtis has a James Ensor poster. I really care about the posters on our heroine's walls.
We care about the interior design of teenager bedrooms of yore.
Yeah, we do. So I would totally watch the next Halloween.
You had seen Halloween H2O in
yes.
college, though, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I would watch the next one. I read the descriptions for all of them.
Right.
And they get
We read them
real
aloud
weird.
To each other.
Real weird.
They may, I believe the phrase, off the rails might apply.
Well, so, but this one, the first one, feels very deliberate. And I appreciate how, however many times his knife goes into people, it does not have any blood on it when it comes back out.
It's like Muppet Murder.
Yeah. Basically, also, no matter how many times you, like, think that you've knocked him down or shot him or stabbed him with his own knife, they always leave him on the floor next to his knife
I get so knocked down, right, but I get up again.
So that he can pick it up and come thump. Back after him. So, you know, I don't know. I just want to see Halloween 2 to find out if anyone learns from their mistakes, maybe.
Based on what I've seen in horror movies since, no.
No, no one has learned anything. Also, no. Don't Fear the Reaper.
Don't Fear the Reaper comes up again. So, that was the 17 movies in rapid succession. Some of the movies that we are going to carry on to watch are Friday the 13th. She just looked at me in horror, so maybe not.
I didn't agree to that.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
I didn't agree to that either.
But we did not watch my 10.
Oh, fine. How many of those were ones that you picked?
17 of them. I don't know.
Well, that's the question. I allowed you 10.
Right.
So you better think about it.
So what else did we get our hands on that we are planning to watch? Do you remember offhand any of them?
Nope.
The Vanishing, the Danish version, or Danish, Swedish, Dutch. It's Dutch, sorry.
I think we've watched all the ones that I wanted to watch.
Two things that I find intolerable.
Intolerance of other cultures.
And the Dutch.
Creepshow.
Ooh, Creepshow.
Carnival of Souls. Oh, Night of the Hunter.
The Night of the Hunter.
I have the Vavitch.
The Vavitch. So, the Vavitch is a recent one. I think they might call it the Witch, yes, but probably. It's spelled the Vavitch. And it is based in New England, and it is based in New England in the time of the Crucible. And so there are villagers and rage and pubescent women and goats. There are goats. And one of my coworkers, when he learned of the plan, the watching plan, he suggested... The Descent! I cannot wait to watch The Descent and talk about The Descent, possibly offline, with one of Anna's coworkers who likes to shout at the podcast when we are talking about horror movies. So, hey there, we'll watch it, and maybe The Descent too. We have The Gate, which is not The Goonies and not Gremlins, but has a vibe of the little kids opening a portal to hell. And we have a few other things we're going to watch that we'll probably talk about and or be obsessed with after we watch them.
So in conclusion, we are not done with this project.
We'll never be done with it.
But we wanted to try to wrap up our thoughts a little bit before we move back into holiday romance season.
Right, and come back to you with some of what we had talked about and what we were finding in our watchings. And in conclusion, if I am going to continue to do horror movie advisory for Anna, which I will, since I love horror movies, I have learned that it is not entirely true that she doesn't like horror.
Which is what I said in the first episode that we talked about this.
Right. So I have to avoid impalement and anything intestinal or digestive of any sort, but it doesn't have to be in a total avoidance of blood. And I would do better to involve something that had some humanity, possible relationships between people that were not entirely adolescent. And I think that we're going to maybe have some more period pieces. I think those might be good.
You mean like ginger snaps?
Yes, like Carrie.
You keep bringing up Carrie.
I do keep bringing up Carrie. But I think that we'll probably do... You know, we are going to do a Hitchcock episode, but I might want to pursue a couple of Stephen King movies. We didn't even talk about it. I mean, we talked about it before, but the Stephen King movies are awesome because of the original material.
Okay. I've seen Misery and I've seen most of The Shining and I've avoided Carrie. My conclusion is that you are good at reader's advisory / viewer's advisory.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Seal of approval. I met several of the movies that I ended up not liking. No. So I chose Evil Dead, and I didn't like it.
Right.
But you chose Zombieland, and I didn't like it, but it wasn't because I didn't like the plot. It was because I didn't like the grossness.
Right.
So I have no fault to find with your movie selection. Only my own.
Well, and we can read synopses more closely, and we can ask the internet what we're looking for and look for content information,
yeah,
which is available. And we still have a gajillion that I've watched that Anna hasn't seen yet. Well, neither of us
are spoiler averse either, so it's not like...
Right, we prefer to know what's going to happen.
Yeah, so I read all of the Hellraiser synopses when you brought up the word Hellraiser, and I decided that wasn't going to work for me.
Right, right. Yeah, and when we went through the list of the top 100 and everything, you looked at descriptions of things that caught your eye, as did I, and that helped you eliminate some possibilities, yeah, too.
That's how we came up with Ginger Snaps and Behind the Mask, and some things that are a little bit off the beaten path that we liked. So...
And you still have veto power if you...
Yeah, I do.
...look for something, like you already vetoed Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street.
I'll watch them as long as I can hide behind you.
Of course you can. That's what I'm here for.
Okay.
I'm not as tall as you are.
Well, I can still hunch over.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Anna, do you have a musical obsession? Is it Don't Fear the Reaper?
No, I'm just trying to figure out... I was in Zombieland. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
That's not a horror movie.
Isn't it?
No.
More cowbell! What are you doing? Oh, is this... That's Metallica.
So my musical obsession, since Anna has not shared hers yet, is For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica. It's played over the closing credits or the opening credits of Zombieland. And
closing, I think.
We had just watched it right before Halloween, and so we were out trick-or-treating, and it was my earworm. We were out trick-or-treating with Little G,
and you
not
were
just
on
her own.
Yourself,
and I was singing to myself, For Whom the Bell Tolls! And... I was sort of singing it to myself, and I was like, I think that's Megadeth or something. And the dad with whom we were trick-or-treating with Little G's buddy was like, that's Metallica. And I was like, right, sorry. But it was really funny, because I was just sort of like muttering For Whom the Bell Tolls under my breath. And he was like, that's Metallica. He's a very nice guy. We like him.
My musical obsession is...
Don't Fear the Reaper.
No. It's from the new Paramore album.
Oh my
it's
God.
It's called Rose Colored Boy. It is a different atmospheric piece than For Whom the Bell Tolls.
A little bit. But she was quoting it to me on Messenger the other day.
Very depressing.
Yeah. Sounds depressing.
I like that about it.
Woohoo.
So I've been listening to the new album, and they have been listening to a lot of 80s music, it seems.
Paramore has?
Yes.
Great.
There's a different song that sounds like it came off of... The music sounds like it came off of Graceland.
Paul Simon's Graceland?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Do they have diamonds on the soles of their shoes?
Probably not.
Excellent. Did Ladysmith Black Mambazo back him up?
No, I don't believe so. But way to demonstrate your familiarity with Graceland. Congratulations.
You're welcome.
Al.
You can't call me Al.
I know.
I can call you Betty.
Okay. What about your not musical obsession?
Oh my God. My not musical obsession. I just about peed my pants about a week ago,
too
maybe
bad
10
you
days
can't
ago.
See her waving this book around.
Waving this book around, gesticulating wildly. Someone in my Twitter feed got their package from Macmillan before I did. And so I saw a picture of Broken Ice by Matt Goldman on the internet before I had my hands on it. And I ran home from work that day and the mail had not brought it to me. And it wasn't until the next day that it arrived in a parcel. Thank you so much, Macmillan Library Marketing. I am so grateful to you for sending me Broken Ice by Matt Goldman, coming from Forge in June 2018. I badgered my editor into letting me review it, so look for my review and book list. This is the second Nils Shapiro novel. Nils Shapiro is a private detective. You may remember me being obsessed with Gone to Dust, also by Matt Goldman, because that's what happens with authors. They write a private detective and then they write more books.
Yeah, so usually.
It's usually the same author until they die. And Matt Goldman is young and robust, and we look forward to many, many more books by him.
No pressure, Matt. No pressure.
Nils Shapiro. I had a little exchange with him on Twitter where I was like, I keep trying to come up with a decent note to write you, but I can't stop just saying, eee! So I love Nils. And in this one, he is investigating a crime.
What?
And someone shoots him with a crossbow. And the arrow goes through his shoulder and nearly kills him, but a doctor is on the scene. The giant lesbian medical examiner, God bless her, saves his life, and he's in the hospital, and then he gets out, and he's going to solve the mystery, because that's what happens in crime novels that star private detectives. Cool thing that's different, in the first one, in Gone to Dust, he is working with the Edina Police Department, which is in suburban Minneapolis. This is also set in Minneapolis, and his friend from when they were baby cops, before they were laid off, is working for the Edina Police Department in the first one. And in this novel, his buddy has left the Edina Police Department and come into business with him.
Oh,
so,
really?
Anders, the former cop, is now in business with Nils, the PI.
That's cool.
And so, but he's like trying to like bring in business and to like make them money and have a steady income, because Anders has like 3 or 4 daughters. And of course, Nils just like lives in a loft downtown and eats Cheetos for breakfast.
He upgraded at the end of the last book. In the audiobook of Gone to Dust, they pronounced it Edina. So anyone who is from Minnesota can tweet at us at Bow Other Friends and tell us what the correct pronunciation is.
And see, I was going with Funky Cold Medina.
Oh, right, right.
So I am certain it is Edina, because I trust many narrators
to check that stuff.
Although
some of them can't pronounce
the one who read Gray doesn't know how to
words.
Say Willamette.
Right.
So get your hands on A Galley of Broken Ice by Matt Goldman, or put a hold on it with your library. Tell your library you're desperate for them to buy it. You have time to read Gone to Dust in
right,
the meantime,
because
it doesn't come
it.
Out until June.
It's available on Hoopla, so you don't have to wait if you have access.
Excellent. Anna just listened to it because I was going bananas for the second one, so she knuckled down and listened to the first one.
It wasn't a trial. It didn't take very long.
No, it was good. But we have a house policy that we don't read the same things, because if one of us has read it, then the other one doesn't need to, and
right.
we can just give each other the highlights and the appeal factors,
it's
and we're good to go.
That way.
Way more efficient. We don't share a brain, but we share a lot of information. What is your regular obsession?
So I have a variety of regular obsessions.
What? You?
I know.
It's been a really long time since we've recorded.
I know. So my number one obsession is we went to see Star Wars The Last Jedi on Friday, and so I'm obsessed with Star Wars The Last Jedi, and then mostly I'm obsessed with Porgs, which are the cute little bird-like creatures that are infesting the island that they're on, and then also the Millennium Falcon. I would like a Porg.
And a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, I've always wanted a Millennium Falcon.
I really liked the Porgs on the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
They're eating the upholstery. They're
awesome.
Detaching the wires. Who knows what they're doing? I also read real quickly. It took me about 45 minutes for each one, maybe. These two graphic books that both came out in 2017. One is My Brother's Husband, Volume 1. By Gengoro Tagame. So he's a Japanese, an out Japanese gay manga writer. And this is the story of a large, hairy Canadian man who shows up at his husband's brother's house in Japan after his husband has died. And we don't find out what happened to him, but he's dead. And his husband, Mike, always wanted to go to Japan, and he, like, finally makes it there. And so he ends up staying with his brother-in-law and his daughter, who is adorable, and doesn't understand that in other parts of the world, men can marry men and women can marry women. And so she's just very curious and the way they answer her questions. But then she, like, goes through the neighborhood and is like, did you know? And so the neighbors start preventing their children from going over to play with her. And it's a bittersweet story about, like, how it's not really okay to be out in Japan.
Where did you hear about this, Anna?
I heard about it on hashtag LIBFAVES17. That's LibFaves or LibFaves, which was a thing happening on Twitter the last few weeks where librarians counted down their, well, listed their top 10 picks of the year published in 2017. We will link to the total list, but the number one pick of librarians was The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas.
Which we're very excited about being the number one pick. This was a pick of our friend Todd's, and it caught Anna's eye, and she read it fast, and I'm going to read it before she returns it. And I'm really excited, and on the back it's blurbed by Alison Bechdel and Anderson Cooper.
Right? That's pretty much what it is. It's kind of meditative and sad in an Alison Bechdel way, and kind of gay in an Anderson Cooper way.
What's the other one?
It has some lovingly drawn muscles.
It does have some lovingly drawn men.
The other one is The Witch Boy by Molly Ostertag, who we follow on Twitter, and who was a tiny baby. I'm sure she's a nice young lady.
I think she's 25. I think I looked her up.
Right.
Very talented. She graduated
in 2014 from the School of Visual Arts.
Holy cats.
So, once you get past the part where you feel old.
And not accomplished, because right. I don't have a book great. Out. She's amazing.
So, The Witch Boy is about this family where all the women are witches and all the men are shapeshifters who, like, protect them. And Aster is a boy who is a witch, and his relatives are all saying to him, no, you can't be a witch. Only women are witches. Quit trying to overhear the lessons of the girls and start, like, focusing on the animals that are going to come to you and tell you that you can take their shape. Animals never come to him because he's a witch. And so it's a great story about, you know, not putting people into boxes and not assuming that, well, everyone in our family does this, so you're going to do this too. And he has a friend who's a girl in the outside world, and I appreciated seeing her and having her be involved in the story too, so it wasn't just so, like, isolated in the magic world. And it's got great illustrations. The way that she draws Aster's, like, I think he's like 12. His gangly body is just, like, perfect. You can tell that she spent a long time studying how to draw tween boys or something. I don't know.
Maybe she has a tween boy in her life that she can keep an eye on.
I don't know. So I recommend both My Brother's Husband and The Witch Boy and Porgs. And cats out of the trash can, please.
There's something in the trash can that the kitten wants. Well, hey, we made it to the end. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming back.
You can find us on Twitter at Bellwether Friends, BellwetherFrnds.
You can also find us on Facebook, and we're on Tumblr. We are lots of places. You could probably just Google us and find some stuff, too.
If you want, you can look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at SurlySpice, SurlySpice.
Our In and Out music was provided by Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie, HimissJulie.
Bye. Bye.
How you doing?
You gonna take all this out?